When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. So today, we're going to be reviewing the movie Baby Boy. And my friend, my good friend over at the It Is What It Is podcast, the VMK podcast, tells me to watch this movie because he was fighting for the battle on his show and saying this is like Oscar-worthy, this is something that he grew up with. This is my first time watching it, my first time experiencing Baby Boy, but I remember seeing the trailer, I remember seeing everything about Baby Boy in 2001 with Tyrese and Snoop Dogg. So let's go on ahead. Let's dive into Baby Boy. And hey, man, welcome to the show. I'm glad to have you back.
Man, I'm glad to be back, man. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here. I skipped some of my workout just to be with you, man. So you know you're a friend of mine anytime I skip leg day to be with you. So.
Exactly, dude. Exactly. You're always at the gym. You're always doing your thing. I don't try to interrupt your thing. But you know what, man? It's a privilege to be able to have you on the show and everything for this review. And I couldn't do this without anyone but you, to be honest with you, especially for your love that you have for this film and the respect that you have for it.
So what Baby Boy is and what it is not, it is a time capsule that has a lot of truth, even if it's not the truth that should be highlighted. It covers a wide range of topics, but it's so, to me, it's such a cultural response that brings up a lot of nuances. To me, it is aged well. And if you look at it objectively, man, it's one of John Singleton's, to me, better projects. Honestly, and I've said this, and I'll stay on this heel, Tyrese and Taraji deserve an Oscar for this film.
And that's, you know what, though? I am a big fan of Omar Gooding. This is my first, get this, I didn't know that Tara P. Henson was actually in this movie until I seen her. I'm like, wow. I was like, very first introduction for me for seeing her on anything was Empire. That was my first introduction to her because I love the show Empire. Empire is hands down one of my favorite hip hop shows at that time.
Sure. And, no, I mean Taraji's. I would say Taraji's been in the mix. I think like she hit mainstream with Empire, but I mean as far as like her work and her projects and I knew about Taraji and you know when this posted right, and then I mean but she's had earlier works. I mean people don't realize. She was also in Family Matters. She cameoed in an episode. You know, like she has had steps. It takes a while, right? But I will say it shifted her trajectory. And Tyrese deserves a lot of credit. I'll just say that.
And you know what? I mean, this movie has like a 71% on the tomato meter, also on the popcorn meter at 87% on Rotten Tomatoes. So they definitely score this high. And also, too, like you said, I love the acting in it. I thought the acting was fantastic. I thought Tyrese was really good in this, but even though his character pissed me off the most. Because here's the thing. I think if I would have seen this in my early 20s or maybe in my teens, I'd be thinking that the boyfriend of the movie was a jerk off. I would think that he was the douchebag, and I'd be rooting for Jody. I think that's actually how I would actually think about it, because we would actually take the side of Jody because we actually think on that kind of level of how Jody ends up being. So we would think, oh, the new boyfriend's just over there being a ball bag, taking advantage of the mother, and just trying to be a father figure to him and trying to be that father role. And then as an adult, I'm thinking, Jody's such a butthole.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. He's such a douchebag. He aggravated me the whole entire movie and stuff like that. I'm like, there is no transition with this guy. He is who he is. And not until you get like towards the end of it, that's when he starts changing.
So there's definitely delayed development in his character. And I think you're absolutely right. Depending on when and how you come to this film is how you view Jody, Tyrese's character versus Ben Rhames' character, right? What's the name? Can't even think of this guy's name in the movie. I just called him Ben Rhames. But no, because the younger, less developed person will see an overbearing father figure who is asserting their command. And they will have more sympathy with some of the moral failings of Tyrese, Jody, right? You get older, you realize, you know, he was actually trying to steer him in the right direction and whatnot. And then you gain more of a sympathy factor for Ben Reyes' character versus Jody. And then you kind of start seeing Jody as, like, you know, refusing to grow up, you know, really kind of sabotaging his own future. And the truth of the matter is both of them are right, because you have to understand both of their journeys, right? I think Tyrese's character, and it's interesting that where the movie kind of came short is you don't get to, and they kind of explain at the end, but you don't really get to see him at his best.
No.
Right? Like, it hints toward it, but it doesn't really show him at his best. And that's the plot. I think you really have to take it in perspective. It's the early 2000s. It's really portraying kind of that environment in the full toxicity of it all, right? And the full truth of it all. And then...
go on ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, man. Go on ahead. I want you to finish your point.
Yeah.
On that.
I think also it's one of those things that for Tupac to be originally casted and then scrapped because he got, you know, he was unfortunately murdered. And then to reboot with this, obviously there's a change in the script, right? And so that's really, I think, a director's kind of influence, right? More than the script or the screenplay itself. So for what it was, for a low budget, for what it was, it did a lot.
Right, because it had a $16 million budget and it made $29.3 million. So it had legs. And also, too, even though Tupac is not in it, his spirit is in the film, because even Jody has like a Tupac artwork and everything on his behind his bed to actually emulate who he is as a person and stuff like that. I think it actually is more relatable that way, because Tupac is still one of the best rappers of all time. Aside from Biggie, Eminem, Jay-Z, and all that stuff, too. But you had Tupac. You had someone that actually represented who he is, who Tyrese's character is.
Right.
And also who he represents and where he came from. And that's also the same thing with him. He's from the ghetto. He's trying to work things out in his head on how to earn money, how to do things. And you have Omar Gooding, who's actually just pissed off at everything because nothing's going his way and he wants a job. And Jody is over there to like, look, man, nothing is given to you. You have to earn it and everything. You're acting like everybody else owes you things. Nothing is in this world is owed. But the thing that I want to mention is this, okay? It's about from boyhood to manhood, from being a boy to being a man. And that's how I feel like this movie is. It shapes him into the man that he needs to be because of Melvin's character.
No, yeah.
Because that's how I seen it.
You know, so Melvin's character, Melvin is Jody 20 years later.
Yeah.
Right? 30 years later, right? So a lot of, I mean, even at the end with the concealing of the weapon and hiding it and basically, you know, concealing evidence, you know, that was a father stepping in to save his son, right or wrong, right? Melvin's character is hard to deal with because it uncovers the complexity of a distorted and yet very, very real truth of relationships that don't necessarily have a traditional nucleus, right? And it shows the weaknesses, but also yet the beauty of it. It also highlights the fact that Melvin himself, because of his situation, also is unemployable as far as being hired, and therefore creates his own company as a landscaper, and that really entrepreneurship was the only way you were going to dig out. I don't think they didn't, and this is where I said this is where the weakness of the film is, which is great because they highlighted the culture of the film, but the weaknesses of the film was that, unlike Boys in the Hood, which is another John Singleton, it didn't show the escape route, right? It didn't show the totality, the finality of it all. Like, totality is not a word. The finality, I'm tired. The finality of where I just said that. Totality, that's not a word. I got myself, no.
Hey, I let it be your word, though. That's what you want.
Yeah, man. It didn't show them getting out. You know, you see Omar Epps' character, Melvin, getting baptized at the end. You see Melvin and Jody kind of coming to this understanding. You see the renewal of the garden that his mother was planting. You see the relationship between him and Yvette. So you see a harmony, which is a beautiful thing, but you don't see progress.
No, they're still
so the same. That's where...
Right.
Right. And that's where I think the film lost it.
Well... Okay, I want to talk about this, okay? We're not going to go scene by scene. I just want to talk about the film itself. But, yeah. Okay, so this is what I'm thinking, okay? So, you know, you're dealing with a lot. You have him dropping off Yvette over at an abortion clinic. You also have him being an immature butthole to her because she's already got his baby and everything, too, his son, and he doesn't want her to have another son or another baby in itself. And then you also have this other baby mama drama with Peanut.
True.
And that's escalating more. And I like how Melvin calls him out on it. He goes, so your baby mamas, they get along, right? Yeah, everything's good, man. It's good. He goes, for how long will that be good? Because it's going to end. I'm tired.
I forgot Peanut was in that. You brought that up. I was like, yeah. See, yeah. But you're bringing it. You're hitting it on the head. You're hitting a home run right here. You see, the real question is Jody a hero or is he an anti-hero? And okay. I honestly think, looking at it now, right, versus when I was a teenager when this came out, Jody is really an anti-hero. And it's hard because we're used to the hero, bad guy, good guy. But the truth of the matter is, everybody's at fault in this film. Right. So Jody's at fault, like you said, no career path, not working, decides to take up a side hustle, which is stealing clothes from a higher end retailer, reselling it on the streets. Already criminal activity, has a baby mama, gets another woman pregnant, unable to take care of either one, does not have adequate transportation, is abusive. You see the domestic violence in their relationship. So there's like a lot of things going on, yet she's in love with this guy.
Right.
You know, anti-hero. Yvette, on the other hand, is in love with Jody. I'm not faulting her for that. But if you look at it, she was in love with the prior Snoop Dogg's character, who's also in prison. right. It was also abusive.
Yeah, right.
Right. So you start to see, like, everybody has their story and their pattern. And what's wild is that what it forces you to do is not to judge, because you're starting to see not necessarily yourself, but you're starting to see how much environment plays into every part of your decision. And that if you're not careful and you're not blessed to be in an environment that produces higher yielding results, this can happen. Not that it will, but there's a possibility that it
There's always consequences behind every action. And because of the actions that Jody followed, you have the whole entire deal of, you have Yvette's colleague basically trying to hit on Jody. Jody's trying to holler at her while he's trying to pick up Yvette. Yvette is only trying to get by, trying to support her son as well, and stuff like that too.
Right.
And, you know, Jody's over there doing side hustles. He's picking up clothes for women to try on and try and make something. He got like $400 or $500 from all the clothes he did.
Right.
At first, I thought to myself, is he going to get mugged? Because he's over there, you know, because we've seen this in every movie, right? Where you actually root for the hero. And at that point, the main character is supposed to be the hero, not the anti-hero, right? Back in the early 2000s.
Right.
So I'm thinking he's going to get jumped. Something's going to wind up happening to him. And then he's broke again. Then there's going to be conflict with Yvette. That was my whole entire thing that I thought was going to happen. But instead, something positive winds up happening. Winds up upgrading Yvette's car, getting her the tinted windows, the rims, the whole works.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And also, too, I don't think it's about him trying to be loud. It's just him trying to support his son and support the woman that... and stuff like that. You don't see him doing that with Peanut. You don't see him doing it with any other side girls. Only her.
Yep.
So you can tell that he definitely loves and cares about this woman, but he doesn't want to settle down with anybody or anything like that either. But I like that moment with him and Yvette where it's like, you know, I was always scared that I was going to wind up being the one that's going to be dead. And you see that flashbacks. Like,
yeah,
you know, that little PTSD or anxiety of him dying, and he wants somebody else, wants the kid to take on his own persona of his bloodline.
And so that's a real thing. And not to cut you off. So that scene right there, and that's why I said I think if there's an Oscar-worthy moment, it's this fear. And that's what I say, is really a culturally correct for an inner city urban environment that is poverty stricken, the fear of dying prematurely or getting, some type of atrocity happening to you is what's always kind of lurking in the background. And that reality is what he's trying to run away from. And it seems like the harder he's running, the closer he's getting to it. Right. And that's, I think, That's the bad guy in the story. It's the environment. So you take that scene right there. You take the flashbacks to the funeral, or flash forwards, really. To this funeral, to this event that, you know, he hopes that doesn't happen, and the reason why he maybe is so free spirited, I guess is the best way to say it, is because it's like he's always living on borrowed time. Versus now, you know, Snoop's character. Snoop's character, and shout out to Snoop Dogg.
He deserved a co-star. Either Omar deserved a co-starring role or Oscar nom, you know, you actually have Snoop that deserved it.
Yeah, I think Snoop captured bitterness, and really how bitterness unfortunately plays out, right? You know, life has gone past him. Like I said, his high school sweetheart has moved on to be with somebody else. He has nowhere to go. He's released on parole under the conditions of basically some type of home safety. He basically forges this address as a safe place so that he could get out. You know, there's a lot of kind of nuances with Snoop's character. But I do think, and by the end of it, you feel sorry for him. You know, like you really feel sorry because he's without hope, right? And that, to me, to sell that in a movie, to sell that really Snoop's not this evil whatever, because Snoop didn't try to terrorize Melvin. Snoop didn't try to go. Snoop felt like Jody stole his life. You know,
right, because he's in prison all that time. Right.
Exactly.
I feel like he was robbed of it, even though it was the consequences of his own life that ended up doing it. But to him, someone that's actually went to jail, went to prison for the things he's done, he's seeing somebody else with his own woman. He's what even makes it even worse is you got hit while he's in prison. Jody's over there, got her pregnant with his kid.
Right.
And then you have that one scene where, remember, when because man, little man got himself a little fort, don't you?
Yeah. And so, like, even with that, the
right
instead of being the father figure for him, which he could have asserted himself and said, you know, I'll play the video game with you and really been compassionate and understanding. There's an animosity, and then there's a scene that I'm glad they did not follow through with it. Right. Like, I'm glad in this show, because it's really uncomfortable after that. Right. So, shout out to whoever made that executive decision not to go through that.
I think that was a smart move to do it like that. It's like, it shows layers to Snoop Dogg's character to Reggie, because he's like, you know, he wants a piece of Yvette, but how far is he willing to go? Because this dude's been in prison and stuff like that. But it goes to show you he even has that moral compass or that moral code of like, look, there's a kid here. I'm not going to do anything because he's here. You know what I mean? So
it does show that. It does. And as the kid, it shows there's still a heart there.
Right.
And that's what I said. Like, you know, this is what I think happened. When the movie was pitched originally, this is kind of in John Singleton's, you know, you're coming off of this, you know, the success of Boys in the Hood. You're building yourself up into what I would say the new, more hip-hop-y Spike Lee. And, you know, that's kind of your forte. You pitch this to a studio, they back it, they fund it. But you're trying to deal with how complex these scenarios are. And it's really, honestly, looking back, it's really a... oh my God, what is James Baldwin's novel, Bill Street? It's this in a more modern hip hop kind of flair. And you can kind of see the similarities. And I wonder, did that influence this? But where he went, and this could just be a budget issue, is that there was no real ending to this movie.
Here's the thing. I'm going to slightly disagree. I mean, sure. With that, because here's the thing. It's about situations, right? It's about everyday life. We never have closure on anything that we go through in life.
I hope not.
Right. Well, I mean, no. But I'm just talking about, like, you know, it's just about everyday life, right? It's basically life. We never have closure on things. We also hope for situations to get better. And that's what we're rooting for. We're not necessarily rooting for the characters. We're rooting for their situations to get better.
Yeah.
As well. So that's what I looked for when I was looking at this movie. I'm like, we're not rooting for the actual characters themselves. Yeah, we're hoping that maybe Jody will actually grow up here and actually grow up. But at the same time, we're hoping that everybody's situations get better in this movie. Yeah. And sometimes situations happen to the point where nothing gets resolved. And that's everyday life, where nothing gets resolved. It's the same people over and over again, not learning from anything, no life experience. Now, the thing that I'm going to say is I think the mother has a lot. And this is me just doing a deep dive real quick, but you know how she's growing a garden and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And you know how she's like, well, you have to leave the nest? My thing was this. I'm thinking you start off with a little small seed, right? Which is your child. You watch it grow.
Right.
Watch the child grow into something. And then after that child grows, he moves on. Same thing with the garden. She's growing a garden, planted a little seed. It's growing. She gets to harvest that garden, take care of that garden, and be patient with the garden. Take out the weeds that has trouble with it, just as Jody's having trouble with everything in his life. So I think it's like a metaphor in a sense. Yes, you know, it's about her wanting to grow the garden because her mom grew it, stuff like that. Sure. But this has been just going a little on a deeper metaphor level. Of everything, of her harvesting and protecting the garden, as sure. just as she's harvesting and protecting Jody.
Sure. I mean, shout out, first of all, to AJ Johnson. AJ Johnson is one of those actresses that gets overlooked. Star, one of the co-stars in House Party, the original House Party.
Yeah.
AJ Johnson. Yeah, AJ Johnson is a legend in her own right, and she's aged flawlessly. Really underrated. I don't think she gets her flowers. But the failure in that is Jody says something. He says, "You want me to leave the nest, but you never left the nest. This is grandma's house. You never left the nest. This is grandma's house." And then it said, "You bring this dude over, Melvin. He's a killer like Henry." So the problem is, even though, yes, there is no cut sequence to it, there's really no cinematography that, you know, backs that statement that Jody puts out there. But to say that, to point to this, is to say, I am what I am because of who you are and what you've done and what you did not do. Now, yes, I do believe adults have choices, but I do believe parents contribute in the choices of their children, right? Mm-hmm. And AJ's character, unfortunately, whether it is stated or not or implicitly implied, did not make a haven that can nurture this development of a man.
No. Which he has like a man child.
A man child because of her choice. And right. whether we agree with it, we're not here to debate. I'm just saying that to say all that and to say that this house is only a result of grandma, big mom. Now you're dealing with generations because he didn't say grandpa. He never even mentioned a grandfather. So now this is second, now third generation, repeating the same cycle. So it's, you know, there's a lot there. It's a lot there.
There's a lot to unpack that they didn't show us, but I believe that you don't have to show us anything. You can tell with the emotion and stuff like that too, without us having to go into it. And you can definitely tell that, you know, Jody is definitely pissed off about the whole entire fact. You want me to move out? You want me to have my own job? But, you know, what are you doing? She goes, well, yeah. But I like how she said I'm straight though too. She's like, well, I'm paying the bills here. You're not. You're living rent free. And I also love it when Mel, this is my favorite part though, but it was kind of cringy, but he's over there spilling the breakfast that Melvin is cooking.
No, the breakfast. Yeah.
He's thinking this is his mom. He goes over there and Melvin's over there naked, making the,
yeah.
He goes, "Want some scrambled eggs?" Man, I'll be like, yeah, "Nah, man, I'm good."
Yeah. I didn't understand. I don't understand that scene. I don't get it. But Melvin is a former felon, incarcerated by his own admission in the movie. And you know, whatever habits he picked up or, you know, obviously gets displayed in the movie. So but I think it is sad. You know what's sad? So like now, I don't know if that movie works because we're living in a very hyper-system.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you know Tide has been upgraded to provide an even better clean and cold water? Tide is specifically designed to fight any stain you throw at it, even in cold. Butter? Yep. Chocolate ice cream? Sure thing. Barbecue sauce? Tide's got you covered. You don't need to use warm water. Additionally, Tide Pods let you confidently fight tough stains with new ColdZyme technology. Just remember, if it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide.
The time. Probably too sensitive, but definitely hypersensitive is the word. But I will say what is alarming that now that I look back, there wasn't one positive male influence in the whole movie.
No, but Melvin did try. I give he did try in his own way.
In his own way.
Yes. And there was always that conflict between Jody and him, though, too, because Jody, especially whenever he's all, Jody's always mumbling under his breath, talking smack about Melvin and stuff like that. Yeah. But then finally, he thinks that Melvin's gone away. Then Melvin goes, "What did you say, your little mother effer?" He goes on ahead, puts him in that headlock. And I thought that would have been his wake-up call to be where he's like, "Look, I don't need to be messing with this dude. This dude is a bad dude. Yeah, he went to prison, but he could also break me, though, too." But then they square off at that one scene after the whole entire marijuana thing happens where the mother finds weed up inside the garden. And it was Melvin that did it.
Melvin is complex. His character is complex. And unfortunately, we don't know Melvin's origin story. The movie doesn't give us any insight into that. We only get a very brief how he came to this point. And then I forget how they met. She said it briefly, like something to something. But here you are. Let's say Melvin in the movie is portraying a 45-year-old male, I think. Not 50, definitely not in his 30s. So let's say 45. And now he's emphatically dad, right? Yeah, he's dad. And they do come to this, you know, clash. They come to this clash. She ends up knocking Jody out. But Melvin's also the one. Now, I will say this. Melvin steals the show when he takes the gun. And we don't know what happened. You know, and if there's a scene in that movie that showed love, you know, obviously not justifying this, but we're just talking about cinematically, you know, in an artistic expression, but showed love, he implicated his own self, knowing he was an ex-felon, by being complicit in the hiding of evidence just so that Jody wouldn't go to jail.
That's fatherly love, and that's wild. And it's everyday life, like I said, though, man. It's like, yeah, we fought, yeah, we squared off, but at the end of the day, you're still your mom's son.
You're right.
And we are always gonna fight because I'm not your biological father, but at the end of the day, I still love you, I still respect you and everything, but I will knock your ass out if you get out of line. But I do like that moment, though. There's no dialogue. His adrenaline's going because he just got done killing
Snoop.
You know, you wound up killing Snoop.
Yeah.
And I like that whole entire thing of the adrenaline is still going in him. There's no dialogue. He's shaking because of the gun. Omar Gooding was the one who shot Snoop whenever he didn't went. And he's like, look, he comes over there slowly. I like how he progressed, and there's that tension buildup, like, oh, snap, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. And I already have a feeling of no, he's like, look, and even though he didn't have to say anything, it's like, look, I've been here before. Like you said, he's been there about 15, 20 years before. This is like the prequel to his life. So he's like, look, I'm just going to process easy, take, and he goes, and he winds up taking the gun, wiping the fingerprints off the gun. And then he gets Jody's hand and gets him to wipe the rest of the fingerprints off and showing him what to do in case of anything. And that's it. And then even though you have the scene with Yvette being pregnant again and they having the baby and stuff like that. But get this. He's not living with his mom anymore. He's moved out. He moved on.
Yeah, he has.
That part of his life is gone. It goes from boyhood to manhood on that aspect of it. And if it wasn't for that, him almost dying because Snoop was going to blast him whenever he pulls up in Yvette's car. And at first I thought, oh, snap, is this going to be a boys to, you know, I thought this was going to be it. Boys in the Hood moment where you have that shot of Jody being shot at. And he's, and I thought he was really dead. I really did. I thought he was dead. But no, he winds up dodging the bullets and everything, even though you see those bullet holes in the house and stuff. I love that whole entire scene where it's like, oh, okay, good. He's okay.
No, that was That was good. I remember. So yes, that drive-by scene was, it was shot excellently. First of all, Omar Gooding was great in that movie. To not break character, to be, Omar says, there's a line in this movie that I think every man who has ever been hit with a setback or feels that for whatever reason things are not progressing has said in some way, shape, or form. He says, I get up and I leave my mom's house at 6 a.m. and I go with my boys to play Madden. Is it, do you think that makes me feel like a man, Jody Joe? You know what I'm saying? Like there's a transparent moment that you can feel the disappointment in how things have played out for himself. Now we know he ends up getting baptized, I think, at the end, and
even whenever he prays and he winds up telling him, look, man, I think that you should get baptized with me.
That was a sincere prayer. I said that prayer reached heaven right there. But he expresses a sentiment of disappointment within himself. Mm-hmm. And it's the only time in this movie where somebody actually took accountability. And like that's we don't say, like, it gets overlooked so, you know, fast because maybe he's not a main character, right? Or at least not the main character. But he took responsibility over his own actions and the hurt that kind of proceeded from it all. And, you know, to me, it's played well, it's written well, it's executed and performed well. Omar Gooding, a role like that, I don't think they would ever cast again.
No. But let me just say this, okay? I love Omar Gooding. I remember seeing him in the TV show Smart Guy.
Yeah.
And that's how I grew up to know him, was in Smart Guy. And just seeing the transformation from being comedic and funny to being this serious type of character that he's playing, I love the switch. I definitely like how he does it. And then, you know, it looks like he's comfortable playing Knockout with that video game that he's playing. He was playing Knockout. And it looked like he was comfortable just playing video games and stuff like that. But then once you get into that whole entire aspect of him just analyzing his own self, he's like, look, I wake up every day to do this crap when I should be out there earning money, having a job, taking care of things that I need to take care of.
Yeah.
He also has that transformation of being from a boy to a man and being in that manhood situation of like, I want more to my life than this. Even though in our heads, we're like, this is another man child. This is someone that just loves playing video games and not wanting to grow up. But then you find out, oh, wait, he does want to grow up. He does want to have a job. He does want to do things and stuff like that. But Omar is also about taking charge as well and being a leader. Yeah. Especially when Jody gets jumped by those 15, 16-year-old kids.
Oh, yeah. At the park. Oh, yeah. And Omar was the one that got him. Yeah, that's a funny scene and a rough scene at the same time.
Right.
But, so there's a respect. I'll say this. What I love about that scene, even though obviously the way it's executed is a little whatever, but they did not want those kids to become them. That's the whole point of that scene, right? So the over punishment,
right?
Is because they basically saw themselves in these kids, what they could potentially come as themselves, and they did not want that reality to happen for them. But getting his bike stolen and everything, that, which also says, so this is what I've been trying to debate in my head. How old is Jody supposed to be in this movie?
I think he's supposed to be at least 19, maybe 20 years old.
Exactly. So he's got to be less than 23, older than 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 maybe, right? And to have two kids, one that was 5 at the time. No, one that was 7 at the time, another one that was 5. Like, it says a lot and it shows a lot. And just kind of looking back, I'm like, how is this character really supposed to be? And then how are these characters supposed to be, right? So, you know, there's a lot that's happening right there. The other thing too is people do change. There's a scene, obviously Jody should not be over there with old girl that, you know, used to worked with Yvette, and he ends up leaving. Yeah, he ends up leaving. All right, he shouldn't have been over there in the first place. But let's just say he did the right thing at the end of it all. We give his due credit for that, right? So, you know, which says a lot that people can make and people do make good decisions even in hairy situations, right? So, you know, there's girl, and this is why I said, and this is why I told you, John, like, you can't, like, Baby Boy should be Oscar-worthy because it's hard to judge. And there's so many different levels and layers that every time you watch it, you're going to get something new. But you're also going to say, what I used to think about this no longer applies, right? And I think that is the great art of storytelling of movies in general, is that if the movie get involved with you, it's a classic. If the movie stays kind of stuck in its own little box, then it's entertainment, right? So, and that's the switch.
And I want to mention this, though, too, as well, because here's the thing. I believe that I remember seeing this, and my first thought was during the summertime, and I was like, this is going to be Oscar. I was thinking to myself, this is going to get Oscar nominations, because the cinematography with it, the way the plot line is, it's a John Singleton movie, but it doesn't get an Oscar nom. But don't forget, we had a big movie that came out at that time, which is Gladiator.
True.
Which, at that time, think of the Oscars as like the World Series, right? Like, everybody has to put on their A game, and you have to try and win the best game that you can possible. It's just that Gladiator outshined Baby Boy and every other movie that came out during that year.
True.
Now let's do a what-if scenario. Now, if Gladiator didn't come out, there could have been a chance that Baby Boy would have probably been nominated.
Maybe. I mean, there's a real... So I'm looking at it, you're absolutely right. So this came out 2001. So, I mean, maybe because Hustle or Flow was nominated, right? And that's another John Singleton movie. So,
well, also too, you had Aaron Brockovich, and that came out during that year.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah, Punching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, that came out.
That's true. I mean, they weren't gonna, like you said, they weren't gonna take the Academy by storm. But I do think that what was presented in front of us and what kind of got overlooked. And this is something I do think the awards need to think about adding, is I'm not saying correct history. You can't correct. Once you make a decision, it's a decision that's made. But you should be able to look at films retrospectively and say, does this need some type of, you know, award? Like, can you award something past its release? I think if you go back and you look at Baby Boy, you have to say, like, maybe we overlooked it for whatever reason. Maybe there's something that's a little bit more hidden with this film. And I don't know, but you're right. 2001 put out a lot of heat. I think Fast and the Furious 2 came out 2002.
Yeah, a year later.
Yeah, so I mean, there was a lot. I'm gonna look. Can we be honest? The early 2000s might have had the greatest release of movies of all time. From 98 to 2005, there's about a 7-year span of content that is hard to juggle. Like, it's just hard to go. I mean, you're talking about, you know, from Rush Hours to, you know, Negotiator to Matrix, right? Like, all these things dropped during that time period. And to pick one movie that was going to surpass, one could say that it was the second wave of the golden era of Hollywood.
I can see that, because think of it like this. Yeah, like I mentioned before, you had Crunch and Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is a kung fu movie that came out
in
2001. You had different types of movies. You didn't have these comic book movies, these franchise movies. Yeah. These are just one single hit movies that came out, and that was it. You had Gladiator. You had Crunch and Tiger, Hidden Dragon. You also had Aaron Brockovich. You also had Fast and the Furious 1 that came out at that time.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, There's also Shrek, Monsters Shrek. Incorporated, Rush Hour 2, Harry That's Potter true. And the Sorcerer's Stone.
That's true.
So it was stacked. It was stacked to the rim on everything.
Do you think that we've lost, like, because of comic books, like, diversity and content creation? Like, we're only making this genre now?
I feel like that studios are looking at franchises more than they are looking at something that's heartfelt and that is actually something that can actually draw an audience in that is relatable. I'm not saying that comic book movies cannot be relatable or anything like that, because I love comic book movies. But, you know, it's all about being relatable. It's all about what character represents who I am as a person and stuff like that, too. It's about representation. So, yeah, I think that they actually gone away from everything and started doing franchises. It's about who can make the $1 billion first. What studio can hit the $1 billion mark versus the artwork. I'm not saying that, you know, the studio wasn't looking at the numbers, but they were, they're looking more at the numbers of the $1 billion franchise now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Honestly, profit has taken over from, profit has replaced originality. And if a studio feels like I can make 20 of these and gross, you know, $1 billion every release, you know, we're going to do it. Even if it's the same plot, it's the same ending, it's the same gist of a movie. And I think it's sad because now how can you expose or how can you usher in the new wave of talent if you basically are dead set on one particular model?
Right.
Like, and that one model really only fits, you know, 3 to 7, you know, actors, actresses in Hollywood. You know, like, honestly, you know, thinking about it, if you're a film studio and you're like, okay, we want to put out something. Okay, what's going to get us to $1 billion quicker? All right, let's look at genres. Probably action, right? Hero, villain. Okay. Okay. Well, if you start looking at the role, like who that could be, like as far as actors and actresses, there's 10 names that, you know, out of these 10, you would really have to stretch. You would get, you know,
The Rock.
Jason
Statham.
Right, The Rock, but he's going to do his own movie. So The Rock, right. Jason Statham. Right. It's $7. You know, so it's The Rock, Jason Statham, Kevin Hart, only for, you know, not only for, but.
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds, that's for. Hugh, Wolverine, Chris Hemsworth, Thor and whoever else, right? Guy that played Captain Marvel. Captain America, not Captain Marvel.
Right,
Captain
Chris America. Evans.
Chris Evans. Who's the dude that played, that took over Captain America's part? What's his name?
Oh, Anthony Mackie?
Anthony Mackie, but see, that's debatable because you only get Anthony Mackie if you don't want to get Jonathan Majors. So right. I feel like, We're down to, and then Gal Gadot, and then Scarlett Johansson.
Think about it like this, though, man. Like, the person does not follow the actor anymore, like they used to back in the 90s. You know how we used to feel like, oh, there's a new Van Damme movie, or there's a new Stallone or Arnold movie. We're going to go out and see it. Nowadays, people don't follow the actor anymore.
That's true.
Either. The only actors that they probably follow is The Rock, Jason Statham. Those are the new faces of the action genre.
And Will Smith.
And that's it. There's not really that many faces to the action genre anymore either.
That's true. I mean, Will Smith, I would say it's The Rock, Jason, Will, and maybe a fourth.
Right.
Maybe. And that's debatable. It's really just, honestly, you said, it's The Rock, Jason Statham, and that's pretty much it. RDJ, is he going to be in it? Like, so it's just these two. These are the two names that if they put out whatever, They can do 100 million, but just, you know, an Instagram post.
Exactly. And
it's pretty much just The Rock, and therefore.
Okay, so back to this, though.
Yeah.
I think that this was a great watch for the first time for me.
Sure.
And I'm going to give it I was going to give it a 3, but the more I kept on talking about it, I'm going to go up to maybe a 3.5 out of 5 for the simple fact of how much I enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But there was some stuff that I wish that they would have actually gave us more of to show more layers and more stuff to make us wonder about what happened to this situation or that situation. It's like, oh, Snoop Dogg died. that's it. Case closed. But I also was wondering, like, this is supposed to be a ghetto story that happened in the ghetto, right? So I wonder if it's like black on black brutality to the point where it's like, well, the cops don't care about what happens in this neighborhood because it's so dangerous. So therefore, we're not going to worry about this case. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm going too far and too deep into that,
So it is an urban, is an inner city urban narrative that I don't think it deals necessarily with. I mean, because all crime is local. So I don't I don't think it deals with black on black crime. I think it deals with the realities of poverty and what poverty breeds. Because we only really saw one murder.
It was just a scoop,
where Boys in the Hood was more crime based, and we used to say less poverty because he was a homeowner, right? So, I think for Baby Boy, the intent is to highlight the effects of a culture that needs revamping and honestly saving, but you know, for the sake of whatever, it just needs a totally new light shined on it, and through it, and where the movie lacked, maybe because of budget, maybe because of directorial vision, you really could not do at that time. I don't think anybody would have greenlit it. We're like, now you have a more conscious consumer that a studio would have got behind, or you would have had a Tyler Perry, right? So now there's like an audience. I'm not saying there wasn't one then. It's just that at the time, studios were not going to do that, right? So, but for what it was, for when it came out, and for how little money that they spent, considering the big budgets, that's the era of big budget movies. That's the Jerry Bruckheimer era, right? So, man, that's as good as it gets. That's a 5 out of 5 for me.
All right. Well, man, I'm glad that we did this. I really am. I'm glad that I got a chance to watch a movie that I haven't seen before. And I'm glad that we ended up getting a chance to just do like a deep dive into this and just talk about it, because this movie is definitely well worth talking about. And if anybody's wondering, it is still streaming on Netflix, but it's going to be disappearing in a couple of days. So if you guys want to check out Baby Boy, you might want to go on ahead, check out Netflix. It is going to be leaving sometime, I think, towards the end of the month. So check out Baby Boy on Netflix. But Vernon, my question is to you, man, like, what do you have coming out as far as your podcast goes? What's going on over at Is What It Is podcast? Tell us.
Yeah, man. We just dropped an episode today featuring Curtis McCoy, business leader, pharmaceutical company founder, and then ended up buying this magazine. And, really, it's really cool stuff, man. We got a few things. I got an NFL player. We got some things dropped. Look, stay tuned. Go to YouTube, CVMK. Hit like, share, subscribe, man. I'm telling you, you don't want to miss a beat. You just dropped the one with DJ High Def. Shout out to Ryan, man. Dude, big things. You got some cool episodes, in all honesty. But y'all also stay connected with us on CVMK Global. Get your supplements there. But man, it's been a pleasure. And I just appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Not a problem, man. It's always a pleasure to have you here talking about movies, just hanging out and chilling, you know?
Anytime. Anytime you need me. Anytime you need me, man.
Hey, you know it. I'm always going to end up hitting you up. You know that, right? Especially if I'm listening to your podcast and I'm like, wait, I need to have you on because you hit a point that I need to actually talk to you about. So I got as soon as you told me that you would review that you did this on your channel for your review that you did over there, and you're like, look, I want to challenge you to watch this. I'm like, okay, I'm all in.
No, so shout out to Steve, man. He's on Chicago Beer Central podcast. Steve Simmons, y'all connect with him on the ground. Dude is blowing up in Chicago, but no, his Baby Boy review is wild. I had him on. Baby Boy, man, is, if you grew up in Chicago, Baby Boy was the movie in 2001. And you know, I'll tell this, Tyrese, AJ, Taraji, Ben Rames, Omar Epps, who else is in that movie? Snoop, Warren G, God rest his soul. Man, fantastic cast, fantastic production, and for what they were given, what they accomplished, it's memorable. It really is.
All right. Well, I just want to put this out there. Well, Rossi's got a big interview coming up next month with former Playboy playmate Colleen Shannon, turned DJ. DJ Colleen Shannon now. And she's going to be interviewing her next month on Rossi's Clubhouse. And then I'm going to be interviewing Danny Elfman's brother, Richard Elfman, and his wife Anastasia Elfman sometime next month as well. And if you don't know who Danny is or anything like that, he was a composer for like Beetlejuice, Batman, 1989, and stuff like that. So I'm going to be interviewing his brother, Richard, because he has a new movie coming that came out with his wife Anastasia. So I'm going to be interviewing him for that. And of course, Anastasia and I will probably do a deep dive on an old classic horror movie, black and white movie that came out years ago. So we're going to be doing that. I will be doing a Joker 2 review next month, followed by a Joker 1 rewatch. So I'm going to be doing that, keeping up a little bit on the times, keeping up with it a little bit instead of going back to the 80s and 90s and 2000s. So yeah, that's going to be it as far as this show goes. And oh yeah, let me go ahead and mention this though too. Rossi will be back over here on Wednesday. We're going to be talking about top 5 comfort movies. Comfort TV shows is what we're going to be talking about. So if you're someone like me who just is going, like if you want something for the background noise, or if you're just going to go on ahead and go to sleep and stuff like that, what is your top 5 comfort movies that you would go to sleep with? Or if you just want to turn on the tube and you just want to watch a TV show and that you already know that something's that you love, that's what we're going to be talking about on Wednesday. It's going to be an audio only podcast, so go on ahead and check that out when we drop it. But we just dropped our Penguin review that we did, and yeah, so that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Thank you, Vernon. Thank you so much for joining me, as always, my friend. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure's mine, brother, anytime.
Thank you. And thank you to everyone that's commented. Thank you, JoJo. Thank you to all our viewers that's watching. Thank you so much. And don't forget to hit that smash that like button, subscribe button. Also do give us a 10-star rating over on the Apple Podcast and Spotify. Now we can actually talk to you guys on Spotify. So if you guys want to, drop us a comment and I'll comment back with and talk to you. As long as it's nice and everything, I'll talk to you. But anyways, that's going to be it as far as the show goes. And now everyone have a great night and bye-bye.
DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops a DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.